Peter, I think you're leading off on the first one.
So agenda paper one's a summary of what the board's been doing since you last met. I'm just going to run through it very quickly and sort of pick up a few highlights. I'm not going to comment on every individual thing, obviously. The first thing I'll mention, which is picked up on page three of the paper, is there's a new project on management commentary to update our existing practice statement because quite a lot has changed in the world since we issued it in 2010. We've been continuing our work on a number of projects, and we're discussing several of them at this meeting, so I won't go into those in detail. So primary financial statements, principles of disclosure, goodwill and impairments. Business combinations under common control, the board's been discussing, has discussed several times since you last met as well, so that's going fairly actively. Dynamic risk management, sometimes known as macro hedge accounting. The board was doing some educational discussions last year, mainly to try and understand how it works. And over the last couple of meetings, it started to talk about a possible way forward. But I think that's still at a very early stage yet. On financial instruments with characteristics of equity, which is about the distinction between liabilities and equity, particularly for the very difficult instruments, the board finished discussing that some while ago, and we're in the final stages of drafting a discussion paper, which we expect to publish towards the end of the second quarter, I think, is the target date for that. The next thing I'll mention is we're doing lots of activity on supporting implementation, particularly for the big four standards that have been issued over the last 2-3 years. The centrepiece probably recently has been insurance contracts. We had the first meeting of the new transition resource group last month, discussed several topics. I think there was quite a good discussion at that, and some more topics coming through for the next meeting for that. In addition, we've been carrying on the support we've talked about before for revenue recognition, leases, financial instruments. There's a lot of information up on our website about how we're supporting implementation there. On the publications front, probably the biggest thing that's coming up is the conceptual framework, which we will be publishing towards the end of this month. So we're just going through the final sort of production process for that. In addition, we've got several projects where we've had recent comment deadlines, and so the board is analysing the comments we received on that, including one or two things that are mentioned in papers later on. Finally, on that front, I'll mention the post-implementation review of IFRS 13 on fair value measurements. At the January meeting, I guess it was, the board had a summary of the feedback we'd had on the second stage of the post-implementation review. This month, the board will start a discussion of whether the feedback suggests that we should do any follow-up work. I think the overall message the board took from the feedback was that IFRS 13 is working quite well. There are some areas where people might like a bit more guidance, and I think the board will discuss whether we should look at any more guidance in those areas. But I think the overall message seemed to be that it's working reasonably well. It's probably not going to need major changes or additions. The update you've got in front of you was prepared before the February board meeting, so I'll just mention very quickly what happened at the February board meeting. There was some further discussion of principles of disclosure, of primary financial statements. There was, I guess, the second sort of substantive discussion on dynamic risk management of the possible new way forward. There was a brief discussion on business combinations under common control about the best way to analyse the issues. And probably the most significant thing in terms of what's new is that the board discussed the research pipeline, which is the research projects that the board decided after the last agenda consultation are not yet active research projects, but they're the ones that the board intends to work on over this agenda cycle up to about 2021. The board decided, as a result of that discussion, that it would aim to start up the first five or so of those pipeline projects this year. So it's the extractive industries, variable considerations, pension benefits that depend on asset returns, SMEs that are subsidiaries, and there's another one. Provisions, thank you. And then the other ones that are in the pipeline, there are three other projects in the pipeline which the board would aim to start up next year or perhaps early 2020. The board also had a discussion about the about the best way forward. There are three projects where the board is about to have to decide whether the next step should be a discussion paper or an exposure draft. And so the board had a discussion about what sort of factors it should consider when it's making that that decision. But the board will actually make that decision in the individual projects over the next probably 2 to 4 months. I will pause there for a moment. So basically I've got to the end of Appendix A. I'll pause there before we get on to the implementation questions and just see if anybody has any questions or comments on what we've covered so far. Javed will take us through the implementation area after those comments.
Crystal?
Two questions. One would be on the management commentary. Do we have any insight into actual usage of the practice statement? And will the discussion around the changes to it include discussions around the status of the document? And not saying to move it to a standard, but I think there are things in between, like the financial statements need to mention whether there is a management commentary coming with it. So the things between what it is today and the standard, so not black and white. And my second question would be on comprehensive income. The paper says the board discussed better ways to communicate other comprehensive income. Is there an idea of removing the option two-statement versus one-statement approach, or is that carved in?
Okay, so on management commentary, first of all, you must be a mind reader, I think, because the board asked exactly the same questions, probably. So in terms of usage, I think the direct usage seems to be fairly low, because in most of the more developed markets, there are local requirements, usually securities regulators' requirements for management commentaries. For management commentary. And when the practice statement was first developed, there was a lot of discussion about whether it would be useful or whether it would not and whether it would get in the way and so on. But we feel that it's got quite a lot of indirect usage. So when jurisdictions are looking at what to do, certainly if they're looking to set something up, the emerging markets possibly would use it as their starting point and maybe even just take it off the shelf. And I think when the developed markets update their local requirements, they'll at least look at it. So I think it has some indirect influence. So the direct usage is probably relatively limited. In terms of status, at a high level, the answer will be no change. So the board really feels it should be continue to be a practice statement, shouldn't be a required standard. Now, you asked an interesting detailed question there about whether we should perhaps enhance the status in some way by having some sort of disclosure requirement in the statements themselves. I think that's an interesting question. As far as I know, the board's not discussed that. It's probably too early to have even for anyone to have thought about that. So thanks for that input. On OCI, there's been a bit of discussion about that, and clearly primary financial statements can't totally ignore that question. Having said that, both in the conceptual framework project and over several projects over sort of a decade or a decade and a half before that, the board has had lots of looks at OCI. It's had lots of looks at whether we can define profit or loss, whether we should define OCI. It's immensely difficult to come up with something. And certainly speaking entirely personally, I don't believe there's a better solution out there waiting to be found. And I think investing another 2, 3, 10 years trying to find what can't be found is probably not the best use of anyone's time.
I find that there are some overlaps in the project. For example, the principle of disclosure is overlapping into conceptual framework, overlapping into IAS 1 materiality. So now, what is the idea? I mean, which one will precede? Or which one is final? That's question number one. And question two is that in this kind of a project, principle for disclosure, for example, are we thinking of making it a different, separate standard itself, or the content of it will be spread over all the respective standards? So these are all confusions created. I think there is a need to clarify those confusions. Why is the overlap, and where finally it is going to appear?
Okay, maybe I'll have a first shot at those, but we might want to pick that up in one of the later sessions as well. So first of all, the conceptual framework has got some discussion of presentation and disclosure. It's at a fairly high level. I think that text is likely to be fixed at this point. I don't see us going back and revising that text. The Principles of Disclosure Project will then be trying to pick that up at the standards level and saying what requirements do we need to have in the standards, whether that ends up being an updated IS1 or spread across different projects or a completely new standard. I think it's much too early to figure out what the best vehicle is for that, but that's obviously something that will need to be looked at. The definition of materiality, so in the conceptual framework, we made a small tweak to the definition, which was basically to emphasise that the users that the definition is talking about are the primary users that are in the financial statements. I think that's not a change in substance, but it's just a clarification. We have an exposure draft out, or at least a comment deadline, I guess, has passed on that, which is proposing slightly more amendment in the standards. Again, not really introducing new material, but building on material that was already in the standards. Some material that was put into IS1, I guess, about 3 years ago. Clearly, the board's still assessing the feedback on that, so it's a bit early to say what would happen. But what we'd expected would happen with that is that if the proposals turn out to be appropriate, then we will amend the definition of materiality in the individual standards, if necessary, in the framework as well, to make sure it's all consistent. And also update the practice statements on materiality to make sure the wording is all consistent. As I said, obviously that's all going to be subject to the board evaluating the feedback we've had and deciding what to do with that.
Right, anything else? Peter, are you going to carry on?
Javed's going to pick up now.
All right, thanks, Peter. So Appendix B details the status of the board's maintenance projects. I will just highlight one project, which is on accounting policy changes. It's on page 16. Peter did provide an overview of this project at your last meeting. It relates to agenda decisions published by the Interpretations Committee. The agenda decision, which we will see some examples of shortly, often include explanatory information. Now, this information might result in entities changing their accounting policies to reflect some of this information. Unless treated as an error, an entity would apply this change as a voluntary change in an accounting policy. And applying IS 8, that means applying it retrospectively, unless it's impracticable to do so. Now, this can be challenging in some situations, and it could be a barrier for entities wishing to or having to move to better accounting. So the board is proposing to lower the impracticability threshold for retrospective application of changes resulting from agenda decisions. The new threshold would involve considering the extent to which the expected benefits to users of applying the change retrospectively exceed the cost of doing so. We expect to publish an exposure draft on this within the next month or so. I will now talk briefly about the Interpretations Committee's activities. Since the last GPF meeting, the committee has met twice, once in November and once in January. Appendix C and D of the paper reproduce the IFRIC update from those meetings. So I'll first talk about the meeting in November, and I direct your attention to Appendix C of the paper. At this meeting, the committee finalized one agenda decision and published tentative agenda decisions with explanatory information on three matters. So I'll first just talk again about the three tentative agenda decisions. It starts on page 2 of that IFRIC update, which is in Appendix C. The first one is on IFRS 9. It relates to a consequential amendment that IFRS 9 made to paragraph 82A of IS1. The other two tentative agenda decisions relate to recognition of revenue in real estate contracts. And they relate to whether an entity recognizes revenue at a point in time or over time. Both of these were practical application issues that we were made aware of. And the committee published what are, in our view, very helpful tentative agenda decisions. Both of these agenda decisions, when you look through them, they first discuss in a more general and educative manner how an entity applies the requirements in IFRS 15, and then they go on to discuss the particular question that was asked. The committee will be discussing comments received on these tentative agenda decisions at its meeting next week. In addition, the committee finalized one agenda decision, which is on page 7 of that IFRIC update. It relates to the allocation of the transaction price for a group of assets that is not a business. The committee concluded that a reasonable reading of the requirements could result in entities applying one of two possible approaches outlined in the agenda decision. The committee considered but decided not to undertake standard setting on this matter. In addition, at the meeting, the committee also discussed two other matters. The first relates to providing relief for cumulative transition differences for a subsidiary that adopts IFRS after its parent. The board has since decided to propose an amendment to IFRS 1 on this matter as part of the next annual improvement cycle. The second relates to clarifying the meaning of unavoidable cost in the IS 37 definition of onerous contracts. The committee will continue its discussions on this matter at its meeting next week. I will now direct your attention to Appendix D, which is the IFRIC update from the January meeting. The committee met via video conference and finalized one agenda decision on contributing property, plant, and equipment to an associate. So I will stop here now and ask if you have any questions on the implementation activities.
Yep. Is there any update on IFRS 16 leases implementation? Any feedback you have received in terms of practical application issues which you would like to highlight?
So obviously we're aware part of our supporting implementation of new standards is of course to try and monitor, to use touch points that we have with the various stakeholder groups that we meet with to understand where implementation is, how it's going, is there anything that possibly as the standard setter we need to do in a sense in the context of understanding how implementation is going. What you will notice that when we, by the way, and as highlighted by Peter, in terms of when we as the standard setter get involved, in a sense, around these new standards, I'm sure you'll notice that, and it's quite deliberate, by the way, and I'll explain why, that we are very much more active, very close to when the standard is published. So for example, the reason the main activity you will have seen in supporting implementation over the last 6 months has been very much predominantly focused on IFRS 17. There's been a bit less in IFRS 16 and even less again almost around IFRS 9, IFRS 15. And the reason for that is that we're always weighing up, as I say, as a standard setter, what do we think our role is to play in supporting implementation and where can we balance being more helpful to the market and not disruptive? And I suppose where we see our role fitting in is, of course, hopefully trying to provide some extra explanation where it's needed to try and explain maybe better what the board had in mind when it wrote the particular requirements, providing, you know, a lot of, say, educational style webcasts and things to help explain that. And we think that where we can be most helpful and less disruptive on that front is obviously close to when the standard is published, as opposed to close to the effective date in a sense. Because if we can do that early, you know, before people have gone far down their implementation processes, made decisions on accounting policies, built them into their systems, etc., that's, as I say, where we can be most helpful, less disruptive. So I suppose at this stage, and that's why you've seen in terms of our activity in a sense around IFRS 16, we were much more active in 2016 than the early parts of 2017, etc. So I suppose in terms of actually since you last met, there hasn't been, as I say, we keep listening out for touch points. We haven't heard an extensive amount of conversation, I suppose, around IFRS 16 implementation. We imagine, and you may confirm that many of you at this early part of the year, depending on when your year end is, but for anybody with a calendar year end, you'll be very much focused on, you know, your 2017 financial statements as well as potentially implementing IFRS 9 and IFRS 15. which both come into play this year. So I can only imagine if there is activity around IFRS 16, it's gone maybe possibly slightly quieter in the last few months, and that will potentially increase. But I suppose other than what you have seen on our website or anything else, I suppose, and now to try and answer your question, there's nothing else in particular that we're aware of that we'd want to relate to you.
Any other questions, comments?
Okay, Daryl, so I've got a couple of other things to pick up. So Agenda Paper 1A is a summary of your previous discussions and how we've reported that back to the board. There aren't any specific points I want to make on that, because in each case the particular things that were discussed are being picked up in comment letter summaries on particular EVs. And the other piece of feedback I wanted to give you was about the bound volume, the book of our standards. So when we met in October, November, we had a discussion of the what we call the blue book and what we call the green book. So the green book is something that, apart from being green, has annotations, it has the agenda decisions, and it's very useful. I mean, the green book is always the one I use, in fact, because I find it the most helpful. It has annotations to the basis and the examples and so on. And you gave us a strong piece of advice that it would be helpful to have a sort of green book version based on the blue book, which is the standards that are required at the moment rather than the ones that might be required in the future. We followed your advice, and ESA is showing you the outcome, which is... Well, internally we've been calling it the blue-green book, but I think we're trying to come up with a slightly better name. But thank you for your advice on that.
All right. Well, maybe what I continue to dream of is a green book that has both the effective standards and the others. Because if I take this one now and... then want to discuss IFRS 16, yep. I've got to get yep. second book.
That's right.
Like before, I had one with IFRS 15, one with the old standard. So from a practicability perspective, the best would be to have it all in one book.
Yep. Elizabeth, are you...
We are producing an annotated... Sorry, colloquially, I've been referring to this as annotated blue. So Peter's right, we're all using different terminology. So we are in the process of producing an annotated red as well. Currently, though, it will only be available electronically, not in print, but both will be as of 1 January. So they're not going to be both available in the one volume, but we are doing both. So this is standards required, accounting periods beginning 1 January. And the annotated red will be latest standards issued as at 1 January. So hopefully that...
So you won't get it in one book, but you'll have two versions.
And that way, the reason we've done it that way is so that actually, because again, that was... We have mixed comments from you, but one of the comments we did get from you earlier was about the consequential amendments. If we'd simply done an appendix and just given you the extra standards, we wouldn't have been able to incorporate the consequential amendments fully into all those other standards. By doing the full annotated blue, the full annotated red, we can give you in the annotated red literally the latest standards with all the consequentials fully annotated. So that's why in the end we thought that was the better thing for you all. Thank you.
Anything else anybody wants to raise, either on the specific issues we've heard about or anything else that was included in the document, including the work plan?
Is the January one, is it uploaded in the EIFRS?
Sorry?
Is it uploaded in the EIFRS?
This is, yes.
Already done?
The blue book, not the red one.
Not the red. I'm talking about the blue book.
Sorry, my apologies. The annotated blue is already on EIFRS. The annotated red we're still just trying to finalise, so it's not yet on EIFRS, but the blue one is.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, then I think we're off to a roaring start. I think that takes us to the tea break, doesn't it?